Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The esteemed and lovely and talented Hub Arkish.
Hello.
Hub Arkish.
An experienced NFL reporter with decades of experience.
670 The Score's NFL insider.
Hub is excellent at his job and should be on TV somewhere because he doesn't have a face for radio, but that's for another time.
Shaw Media and Pro Football Weekly.
I don't think that there can be any disputing that Aaron Rodgers is a complete tool.
Hub Arkish, that's getting better than this.
Hub Arkish with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their new website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com. We're broadcasting from Bourbonnais on Friday, so we want to talk some Bears now that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy have met the media. So our guy Hub Arkish joins us on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Hey, Hub.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good talking football with you, Hub. We're doing real well. Looking forward to seeing all of the crew out there. I guess we have three of them in succession, right? Friday, Monday, and Tuesday.
Correct.
We're punching them out and then getting the hell out of there once the initial buzz dies. But there are some good stories. There was a ton of the news conference initially devoted to the kicking position. But I just would be curious, things that are more at the front of my mind, the health of Ha Ha Clinton Dix and what you think about the tight end position. What do you think of Clinton Dix so far? What do you know about his injury?
Well, you know, they're telling us it's just a knee strain. I actually coincidentally did a one-on-one interview with him the last day of minicamp. And he was not, visibly bothered in any way as we kind of stood and talked. He did have some participation that day. So this is apparently something that either got tweaked on that last day or was tweaked but not bad enough that they sat him down. Our understanding is there has been no surgery, that this is precautionary. It's a guy who in 5 years has never missed a game. So I don't think you can get too concerned about it. And hopefully they're just being very careful with him.
Do you believe, or did you believe when they made the signing, that this is a win for the Bears, Ha Ha Clinton Dix over Adrian Amos?
There's no question this is an upgrade. You got a lot of Packers fans who've been going crazy on Clinton Dix for the last year and a half or so, and there's no question that his play dropped off a little bit. It slipped in the last couple of years, particularly his appetite for contact. But you're talking about, first of all, what people don't realize is that the two of them are 4 months apart. You know, you keep thinking, well, Clinton Dix is the older guy or whatever, but they're both 26. Clinton Dix won't be 27 until the end of the year. They're 4 months apart. And in 5 years in the league, Clinton Dix has 17 interceptions and 4 forced fumbles. In 4 years in the league, Amos has 4 interceptions. I think he might have 5 forced fumbles, right there. But Clinton Dix is one of the best ball hawking safeties in the NFL. Adrian Amos is just a guy, and he had a better year in his fourth season than he did his first three, but this is a guy who still got benched halfway through his third season. So I love Adrian Amos. He's a great kid, but there's no debating it. I mean, Clinton Dix has been a better football player over their NFL careers.
If I remove kicker and I remove how much of a jump Trubisky takes in year two from the offense from the discussion, what's the biggest Bears training camp story?
Probably the tight ends. Mac mentioned it. It's the one place on the depth chart where I don't think people are actually excited going in. I mean, you can make a case for what's happened at almost every other position. I still have some nagging concerns about the running game, not because I doubt it or I don't think it's going to be better, but just because you can't assume it's better just because they swapped out some players. And I will tell you, Leonard Floyd is going to be a huge story because the Bears are making it a huge story. Everybody has raved about the offseason that he's had, and we know he had an excellent second half of the season. So I'd say probably in that order. After kicker, it's going to be the tight ends, then the running game, and then keeping an eye on Floyd and seeing if he becomes a Pro Bowl type player.
So let's go over the depth chart at tight end. Trey Burton, all signs, he's going to be ready to go when they start camp. And a clean slate. All that stuff that happened at the end of last year is a memory, right? Everything's good.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, Mac, but the guy ended up needing surgery. Do people still want to suggest that this was some kind of mental suggestion, you know, issue or anxiety? That was ridiculous. I mean, it's unfortunate that the injury, you know, was discovered and occurred when and how it did. But the guy was hurt. He's had it fixed. He had an excellent first year with the Bears and can do more. Yeah, so I'm excited about Trey Burton. I think the question is he a move tight end, Burton. He's always going to be a move tight end. He's a willing blocker, but he's not a great blocker. And in 12 personnel and running situations, he may not be the second guy you want on the field. You can put him there. But with one tight end and 11 personnel in running situations, it's got to be Adam Shaheen, unless it's going to be a lesser player. I mean, you know, Ben Broniker is a guy going into his fourth season who in 3 years has been a solid special teams guy and, you know, interesting kid with the Harvard background and all that, but probably isn't going to emerge as your number one tight end. And the Brad Sowell experiment is interesting, but I think that's really just more having him for 12 personnel and in obviously running situations. You can put him and Shaheen out there and you can block it real well if you want to run from your two tight end set.
I think that's their intention, don't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah, clearly it is. Now, you know, they're telling us, oh, Sowell's a good athlete, and he's working on his hands, and he's dropped some weight. But let's be honest about it. What this move really is it's a backup plan for if Adam Shaheen doesn't become the player they want. You know, it gives him more blocking at the position. Shaheen's a great kid. He's worked hard. He was the most impressive guy in Bourbonnais last year prior to, you know, that injury occurring week two in exhibition games against Denver. He's had a good summer again. But until he does it on the field, he's still a Division III guy and a big body, you know. And so I don't think it's a dire situation, but I think it's the most curious one, and it's one where you really have to cross your fingers and hope that you see the most improvement.
The Bears start early with a Thursday night game. They have four preseason games instead of five, so they're getting to camp at a later date than they did last year because they're not in the Hall of Fame game. Do you expect Matt Nagy to repeat how he handled training camp in the preseason in terms of starters and veterans not really playing?
You know, Dan, that's a great question because my answer 2 days ago would have been, yeah, you know, the main purpose, we believe, is a team that had been among the most injured in the league in 2016 and 2017 was one of the healthiest in 2018, and that was one of the reasons they did it. And whether that's the reason that they were healthy or not, I don't know, but it seemed to work. And so, yeah, you would expect them to repeat it. But then, really not even looking at that issue, but talking about something else, I asked Nagy on Sunday in Decatur about the use of David Montgomery and the idea that if he's not, you know, Matt has told us that his offense doesn't lend itself to a running back getting 15, 18, 20 touches a game consistently. So my question was, well, with all your hopes for Montgomery and with Tariq Cohen and Mike Davis there, how are you going to find out what Montgomery can really do if he doesn't get, you know, 20 touches a game? And his answer was, well, you're going to see an awful lot of them in preseason. Now, you know, you certainly wouldn't have if he was a penciled-in starter last year. So does that suggest that they are going to play these guys a little bit more with one less game, a few less practices? I don't think so, but I think you'll see more of some select players. You're not going to see more of Trubisky. You're not going to see more of Mack or, right, you know, Floyd or Hicks. But I think you will see a little bit more of these tight ends. You will see a little bit more of these running backs because they got to be ready. The other thing that Matt pointed out is that opening on Thursday night is a big difference because not only do they have extra training camp time, but coming out of camp with all the restrictions on contact and pads, you've basically got, you know, 2-3 practices after the final cut to get ready. So they're going to have to play these guys a little bit more. My guess would be maybe that third preseason game in Indianapolis, which could be a pretty good test.
Hub, tell our listeners a little bit more about Mike Davis, because I'm starting to wonder a little bit, not suspect it, but I'm starting to wonder if he's a little bit of a wild card that not many of us are thinking about who could play a pretty significant role.
Yeah, you know, Mac, he is a huge wild card. This is one of those where I get myself in trouble because I try and just be honest and objective, and people think, well, you don't like Mike Davis. I love Mike Davis. The kid bought his mother a house. I mean, how can you not love him, you know? But as a football player, he was a fourth-round pick out of South Carolina 4 years ago, spent 2 years in San Francisco with one of the worst running back rooms in the league, and he couldn't really get on the field. They let him go. He gets picked up by Seattle, who 2 years ago had one of the worst running back rooms in the league, and he couldn't claim playing time. Now, last year, he finally got, I want to say it was 5 or 6 starts before Chris Carson took over, had his best year, but he had one game against Arizona. I think it was week 2 or week 3. They had the 32nd ranked run D in the league, and he put up 100 yards. Over the course of 4 years in the league, he's only managed to get into 35 games. He's only started, I want to say, 9. And he's a 3.5 yards a carry guy. And, you know, Jordan Howard is gone because he was just 3.7 or 3.9 last year, whatever it was. So, I he's a different style than Howard, and they think he fits Matt's offense. But I don't know how you project this. And what was really interesting was after I asked the question about Montgomery, and they talked about where he was at, and Ryan Pace came right out and said, he's done everything we expected. We love him so far. But he hasn't had pads on yet. And so now we got to see what happens, you know, with some real football. They then turned around talking about Mike Davis and say, people are going to be surprised. This guy has been outstanding during the summer, and we're really excited about where he's at. Well, if you can't tell what Montgomery's doing, you know, in these offseason practices, how did Davis suddenly get to be a better football player? So they like him. They've seen things on tape. He's not a bad football player. But the idea that he could actually be the number one and Montgomery's not that critical, I don't see how they can make that case. So it's going to be really interesting to watch, not just through Bourbonnais, but the first couple weeks of the season.
Do you think the opening day kicker's on the roster?
Yeah, I think there's a good chance it's Eddie Pinheiro. I know that he's a well-thought-of player. He would have been the Raiders kicker last year. He had won that job in training camp. Then he tore a groin right before the season started. And so, you know, he's well thought of. You can see that he's got a better leg than the other 7 guys that were there. You can see the velocity.
Seven.
You can tell it in the way it comes off the field. The ball comes off his foot, the sound. And they like him. And he was very accurate and kicked in pressure situations in the SEC. Now, that said, I think they like Fry. And again, we were a little surprised on Sunday when Ryan kind of unprovoked mentioned that they're watching the waiver wires. And so I asked him, are you looking for 1 or 2 veteran kickers who you know might be out there? Or are you just watching the waiver wires? And he said, no. He said, there's a couple situations we've identified that we know are tight. So there's obviously a veteran or two who may get cut, who he might be interested in. But at the end of the day, the way this is shook out, it seems most likely to me that Eddie Pinheiro is going to be their kicker on opening day.
Do you know who those guys might be? Where those jobs, there's a competition where you might be able to get a veteran?
Yeah, I mean, they were clearly other teams that have multiple veteran kickers in camp. And this is something every team does. It's not unique to the Bears. I don't want to pretend I've got some scoop here. But it was just surprising to hear Pace go there because he could have just as easily left it as we've got these two guys and we'll see. So minimally, he acknowledged the competition is not over yet. We knew that, but he also acknowledged that there may be more auditions coming, and it just depends. And you probably won't know until the final cut, which would really be interesting because it's hard to see them going all through camp choosing Pinheiro or Fry and then deciding 2 days, 3 days before the first game to let one of them go and bring in a veteran.
That's what I'm rooting for.
I think that'd probably be, the only choice, but I don't know that that's the best way to go. Again, this Pinheiro looked like an NFL kicker, so that's what I think we got to keep an eye on during training camp.
Was the volume of questions asked of both the head coach and the general manager at the introductory news conference disproportionate regarding the kicking situation? I mean, did it need? I don't know how excessive it was. If it ate up half of the news conference, it sure. I know it started that way. 12 of the first 14 questions, I guess, were about the kicker.
Well, not only that, but 13 of the first 14 questions were directed at Pace, and so now there is a reason for that, though. We don't get a lot of access to Ryan during the season,
right,
whereas we get to talk to Matt Nagy every day, and so I think that was a big part of it. A disproportionate number of questions about the kicker. It may have felt that way, but a lot of them were kind of, you know, one word or one sentence answers. And I would say of the 29 minutes that we spent together, probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 minutes were on the kicker. That normally would be a lot, but when you think about how the season ended, I guess you understand it. So it felt a little out of whack, but it did settle down once we got deeper into the press conference.
I am absolutely rooting for the 10 kickers at minicamp, the 2 kickers at training camp, go through the entire preseason with these two guys, and then they ultimately cut both of them, and it's some schlub from another team that we didn't talk about for the last 6 months. That is now my new goal for this offseason, Hub. Just for the amount of time wasted on it. Like that would just be so much chef's kiss. That would be beautiful.
I thought, and this is me criticizing my peers and comrades, which I never do, but I try not to do because it's not appropriate, but the amount of time that was spent on the 8-kicker, you know, clown show during OTAs was that was just kind of media silliness, you know. But now that we're down to these two, I get what you're saying, Danny, but I don't know that it's the best thing for the football team to, you know,
oh, neither
to go
do
through
I.
all that. Yeah, and then suddenly a couple of days before the first game, you got another guy coming in here. So that's why I'm guessing it probably won't happen.
No, I have no idea if it's the best thing for the football team. I just think it would be hilarious for us. Thank
Good
you, Hub.
Good talk radio stuff.
Good stuff, Hub. We'll see you later in the week.
All right, guys. Take care.
We'll see Hub in Bourbon. Wouldn't that be just perfect? All of the kicker from the AAF, kickers from Arena League, kickers that haven't kicked since college 3 years ago.
Sebastian Janikowski, come on, get on the next flight to Chicago. You're only here for 3 days, and then the Packers and Bears play each other. That would be perfect.
It would just be great. And then, like, Matt Bryant's the kicker the Monday before the game. Okay.
Hub says he's reluctant to go after guys in our business. You and I usually not so reluctant, and I recognize this is being a 90%er, and I would prefer to be a 10%er. But I'm not. I don't go to those news conferences to ask questions, so I'll sit on the sidelines and jeer with the other 90%ers and make fun of the way it was handled. It has been an incredibly, for my taste, disproportionate amount of verbiage given to the damn kicker.
Yeah, I think it's the only real position battle, and they lost in such a heartbreaking way that it makes sense why. This is abnormal, right? It's abnormal to lose how they did and then to audition kickers like they did.
Never seen it.
And then be as so open about it. So if news is the thing that is absent of the ordinary, right? Like just that standard definition, you just said you've never seen the kicker position handled this way. So that's why the questions are being asked in such abundance, and the rest of the team is relatively cemented.
Yeah, and the Bears need to make Ryan Pace available more regularly. The fact that he only speaks about a quarterly basis? He'll hold a news conference, and that's it? That's not enough. Be front and center.
I agree.
Otherwise, the Bulls aren't just going to catch you in where the franchise is valued. They're going to jump over you and just run away and hide from you. You see that? The Bulls have caught the Bears in franchise value.
I know. The NBA.
$2.9 billion.
The NBA, I mean, it's a very healthy business.
Yes, they have they have 29 teams in sports' top 100 list of franchises. Everybody in the NBA is in there. They jumped up. All 29. There were 26, I think, last year. The 27, 28, 29 all jumped in this year.
Yeah.
Good for them.
It's a really healthy business, and obviously playing 82 games instead of 16 helps drive all of that revenue, but it's
keeps the pressure on the Bulls.
Yeah, right. John Morosi coming up at 4:30. He'll have all sorts of insight on both sides of town for the trade deadline. There's a story that crossed my timeline today that I feel like should be a much bigger deal in the sports world than otherwise. I want to know if you feel the same way coming up on The Score.
Hey, Lisa.
What?
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You were in that fight. The fight on the radio. You're the fighter?
Let me give you that idea.
You killed the other boxing man.
He's dead?
The radio said he was dead. You are the first person I've ever met who has killed somebody. I want to know what it feels like to kill a man.
I can tell you.
didn't know he was dead until you told me he was dead. Now that I know he's dead, you wonder how I feel about it? I don't feel the least bit bad about it.
Woo!
That's eerie. It's a,
Is that Butchie?
It's a brutal sport, man.
That's Butch from Pulp Fiction, I do believe,
yes.
Right?
Booch.
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 Terry Boris is producing the show today. It's Booch. Got kicked in the nukes.
Bottom of the hour on the score, brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Your Western Conference champion, Chicago Wolves, will open the season Saturday, October 5th. For group and season tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com. I don't know how many people know this story, although it is now getting some national attention. It's on the front page of ESPN.com. I apologize if I get the pronunciation wrong, but junior welterweight fighter Maxim Dadashev, he died today, and as a result of brain injuries suffered in the fight Friday night, he got knocked out in the 11th round. He's in the 140-pound.
This is boxing. This is not MMA, right?
Correct. This is boxing. Mm-hmm. So over the weekend, big combat sports weekend. There was a UFC card that Greg Hardy fought in. The fights were available for free on ESPN. There was an ESPN Fight Night card on Friday night, which is when this tragedy happened with Dadashev, and Manny Pacquiao won a pay-per-view fight. So big combat sports weekend this past weekend, but. This guy, Dadashev, his trainer said that he considered stopping the fight after the 9th round, but he kept saying that he was good, and then he threw in the towel after the 11th round.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, after the 11th round, Dadashev kept saying, please don't do it, I want to keep going
sure.
out there. And the trainer said that he had already made the decision that that was going to be the last round, and he was just asking him out of respect to him. And even though Dadashev said, I want to keep going, he turns to the ringside physician, throws in the towel. So he throws in the towel, fight ends, other guy wins, they get him out of the ring, and he's almost literally dead man walking. He is completely glazed over, he can't walk, he can't control himself,
right?
He's being basically...
ton of brain trauma.
He's being dragged out on his feet, for all intents and purposes. His wife flies over, I believe, from Russia, and she gets to the hospital, and he dies. So I start reading about this guy, and it's tragic, and he's 28 years old, and he's got a young kid, and there was no prior sign of health issues. And Max Kellerman put it that he was basically fighting for his green card. He wanted to immigrate to America, and he's this up-and-coming fighting prospect. So I start reading about it, and a buddy of mine sends me the list. And listen, this is Wikipedia, so there could be an omission here. But take a guess, and I know I told you before the show, but just out there in the audience, think about this. How many people would you guess have died from boxing in the last 3 years? If you would have asked me that before this incident, I would have said zero? One?
I would have thought one or two.
Six people have died from boxing in the last 3 years.
Those are professional fighters?
Just
professionals. So we don't know of any CYO leagues. This is only professional fighters.
That's correct.
If they still have CYO leagues with boxing, I don't know.
Puerto Rico, Thailand, the UK, and two in Canada. This is the first fighter to die in America since 2009 when Benjamin Flores, also 2009, there were two in the U.S. in 2009, the Benjamin Flores fight where he died, but then Francisco Rodriguez, who trained in Chicago, the Mexican fighter, but known largely in the Chicago fighting circuit. So it's been a while since it's happened in the States. But this is a fight that's on national TV. It's on ESPN. He dies in America. Six fighters have died in the last 3 years. And I don't see any sort of real referendum about whether or not, you know, this is acceptable that a professional boxer is dying once every 6 months.
Doesn't appear to be much of a public concern. ESPN still spends a lot of money and a lot of time programming boxing. There still seems to be an audience for it. I turned off on the game a long time ago. I never enjoyed it as a participant, really. it brought out sides of me that I didn't really know existed and never want to have resurrected again because of the object of the game. I find it nauseating. I believe it's unfortunate that so many who start in it, the male brain doesn't develop fully until about 25 years of age, and you couple that fact with all of the blows to the head, that brain may never develop appropriately. So whatever decisions young 20s make about their profession when it comes to blows to the head, they're not really doing with a clear mind. And who's going to suffer when young boxers die? You just said the Russian fighter had a young kid at home. He has parents, probably. Those are the people who will pay and be sad forever because of the decision he made to try and support his family by beating the crap out of another human being.
And so what is acceptable in terms of a loss? Because a big part of me, like, I enjoy it. I enjoy the UFC. I enjoy MMA. And I know a lot of people will actually say that even though it appears more barbaric and there's, you know, smaller gloves and there's kicking and wrestling and choking, that it's actually safer because the knockouts normally come a lot quicker.
There's more broken bones, though, aren't there, in MMA?
Yeah, sure, there's more blood, there's more broken bones, absolutely. But the fights are generally stopped quicker because there's less padding, so it's normally a one punch. Like, one punch can get you, one kick can get you, a quick chokehold could get you. Like, I enjoy it. I really do. It's barbaric. It's the modern-day gladiator thing. It's like, these guys know what they're getting in for, they're signing up for it, and they're going at it with each other. But there's that other side of me that, like that's like the primal side, where it's like, I would never do it, but wow, it's entertaining to watch other people do it for my enjoyment. But one guy dying every 6 months? That shouldn't be an acceptable cost of entertainment, you wouldn't think.
So what to do about it?
I don't know, because all of there will be another fight night this weekend. Like, it's not like the boxing community, they'll mourn the death of this guy, but they're not going to stop.
There's an active youth boxing culture in Chicago, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean,
Joe Madden has a relationship with it. He does charitable work to raise money for kids, to get them off the streets and get them in the ring, teach them how to beat the hell out of people with gloves on instead of with knives.
It's a conflict that I will admit to being somewhat naive to. I didn't know that there were that many deaths in modern boxing. I thought that we had gotten smarter with brain trauma and there were more ringside physicians, that was more of a thing of the past. And I will raise the right hand and say I was ignorant to this. I didn't know the rate of death was this rapid.
I was too. I think most are. It's a sport that has left our consciousness as a nation. It still has a cult following. I have a good friend who still follows all of this stuff, Shaky Suntress, who used to work here at the radio station. He absolutely loves the game, the sweet science, they call it, which just it really, somebody a while back should have recognized the stupidity of it and started having some serious questions about health concerns. And shockingly, a lot of these boxers live a long time, but I have to wonder what their quality of life is, because if you talk to a boxer, most of them aging boxers, you get to be 50s, 60s, and 70s. There's not much there. At the end of his life, there wasn't much there with Muhammad Ali.
Right. What am I missing in terms of, is it simply mainstream popularity that we can talk about a concussion and the concussion problem in the NFL, but there's actual deaths in the other sport? Like, we don't have a lot of – we have examples of players dying posthumously and dying young and taking their own lives. We have Duerson and Seau.
Right, but there haven't been two NFL players killed on the field in the last –
Right, there's
year.
Not guys dying on as a result of an injury suffered on Thursday night football.
No,
That is a crazy thing. We don't have it in any other sport where it happens with that degree of regularity. I was floored when I saw that.
Yeah,
list.
That's a
straight
lot.
Up floored. And no one will come out and say the sport should be stopped. And I will be honest with you, neither am I. Like, need,
I don't support it. I don't want to be party to it. I don't want to watch it. I don't really care to know what the outcomes are of even these big fights that people pay a lot of money to watch, and that every time they have one of these big fights, it breaks a new record for viewership and money, right? They just continue to improve the – and everybody wants this thing. I don't. I want to run as far away from it as I possibly can.
A texter makes an interesting point. You know, he says, listen, there was the stat as of 2013, 63 football players have died from heat-related strokes. Like, there is a question of what cost is too high. Should netting be put up around the entire ballpark because one person dies? Is one death too many? Is one death in boxing too many? Are we going to stop practicing in the summer in football because of heat stroke? I get we can't live in a bubble wrap, and there is inherent risk in there's risk in driving to football practice, much less being at football practice.
Right.
So I'm not even trying to necessarily be an alarmist. I am just saying the death rate in boxing is way higher in 2019 than seems normal or acceptable. And no one is, I don't see it on any of the shows.
I would think with far fewer participants, too. I would think.
Of course. It's an individual sport. Yeah. It's not a team sport. So it's just, it's like one of those things where we say we identify a problem as opposed to the solution. It's not going away, but I just don't think the average American consumer knows that people are dying at this rapid of a rate.
No, and I wonder if they care, because those who support the sport will say, hey, they're making the decision. Well, who am I to judge him?
Yes,
who,
of course.
Who am I to say this guy shouldn't choose to get his egg scrambled the way he is?
Well, I mean, that's what the guy...
That's fine.
Oh, my God, you two suck. Personal choice, personal responsibility. It's a thing. Stop policing everything. Listen, again, I was literally this past Saturday watching UFC fights with my friends.
Yeah, that's me. Don't group Danny in with this. This is me. I'm the one who sucks because I don't like boxing and wish it would go away.
But I had no idea that the death rate was that high, and I'd be really interested in an explanation on what they're doing to curb that, if anything, or if it's just inherent to the sport where guys are so big and strong and tough that they can absorb 400, 500 punches, and we don't know the ramifications of it. Because, I mean, right? Athletes are getting bigger, faster, stronger.
Oh, yeah.
So what's,
that's real.
So what's the impact of that in a sport that's repeated head trauma, whereas in the UFC, it's a one-hitter quitter?
It can't be good.
It can't be good.
I'm guessing bad things.
But I wonder, I'd be interested in a study of, is the death rate in boxing actually increasing? You know, everything right. In sports seems to be getting safer. Right, you get safer in auto racing. It gets now horse racing is having its own issue. That's a separate topic. But like, most things in society get safer as we learn more about them. I wonder if in boxing it's actually getting more dangerous because guys are able to sustain more hits to the head in the moment.
Betting yes,
right?
My bet is on yes.
That is a weird thing to acknowledge that we're watching a sport that is not as popular, but leading in way more deaths than it did in the past. So totally bizarre. We're going to relive a famous anniversary coming up at 4 o'clock. John Morosi at 4:30. It's Mac and Parkins on the screen.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Sure. Welcome back in. Mac and Parkins on the score. We have a pair of Cubs and A's tickets to give away before we get out of here. John Morosi also will join us at 4:30.
Excellent on your part to promote that, Danny. Sometimes we fail to do that, and we do have Cubs tickets to give away. What time you want to do? Last hour of the show. How about during the 5 o'clock hour, the power hour, if you will?
That seems like a good time.
Perfect. Glad we agreed.
Okay, perfect. Let's get in there. 312-644, I don't know. Just seemed like the thing to say at the time. Speaking of safety, last night was the first time that White Sox fans got to experience the netting going foul pole to foul pole. The Tribune has this quote from Jake, who is 14 years old.
Okay.
I'm more of an old school guy. When you come to the game, you should be paying attention. You shouldn't be on your phone. End quote.
I remember when I went to the games, some of the players, they throw gum out into the stand.
Jake's an old soul, isn't he?
That is just proof that stupid opinions can be taught.
Yeah, can we, no question. We all need to stop being so judgmental of other people. Unless somebody is driving or not participating in conversation at the dinner table, like you guys were discussing per Pat Fitzgerald's comments yesterday on the show.
Yeah.
Let's let people be on their phones at ball games and not be critical of them for it.
Well, and it's just a false choice. Like, the 4-year-olds who got smoked by Albert Almora's foul ball wasn't on her smartphone.
Probably not.
You know what I mean? The old woman who died at Dodger Stadium wasn't on her phone. It's not as if, oh, if I'm not on my phones, I will get out of the way of the 110-mile-an-hour right. baseball.
It's off point. It's just dumb.
Listen. Watch. Take it in.
Pat.
What did you think about what Fitz said?
I agreed with your commentary yesterday, and I'll augment it. What you said yesterday is right. He's correct about the habits of young people today, and
yeah.
it can be annoying, and it has cost some people. It's cost a generation the ability to communicate as well as they probably could have without their thumbs. You know, you don't have an opportunity to make an impression on a boss, even for an entry-level job as you're a teenager, because it's all done online. You don't do the face-to-face contact, walk in, firm handshake, look a man in the eye, and tell him you live to wash his restaurant's dishes like I hustled all those years. So there are some communication skills that have waned because of that. But I think something that is that he failed to consider and why people aren't going to college football games as much is look at the demographics. There's a big part of this country has been for a long time, and Terry Bohr says it's still on the rise, but baby boomers, people who were born between 45 and 65. We're all getting older because I'm a boomer. I'm a late boomer, born in 61. As we get older or die insures it, but you can pretty much insure it too. As people get older, they go to fewer and fewer events. So you have a huge percentage of people in this country who might have gone to college football games or any sporting events who just don't go anymore. People do less as they get older, and there's a lot of us out there who used to go to games. Now, don't text me right now saying, my dad's 79 and he's a season. Yes, your dad might be that guy, but most people stop going to events to the same degree of frequency when they age.
Yeah. That makes the sense in the world.
That's got to be a huge part of the small dip in college football attendance.
Yeah, and it's just you'll also get a smaller percentage of your revenue from attendance, but you'll get a way higher percentage of it from television. So as long as people are still consuming your product, it shouldn't matter as much.
Yeah, be Wake Forest, Fitz. Be Duke, okay? Let's not put a little silly non-conference loss on the card this year early.
That would be helpful.
I got 12 TVs in their man caves or their TV caves. Did he call them TV caves?
They'd rather have 12 TVs set up in their TV watching cave.
The TV watching cave.
12's too many. 12's too many. I'm ready for three. I got two. I'm ready for three. Hey, 10 years ago today, I know a very special day in your sports fandom and career and all that. So we're going to go down memory lane coming up. It's Mac and Parkins on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.